outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Good morning, everybody. By golly, it's a fine morning this morning, and if it's as good a morning in the morning as it is this morning, it'll be a fine morning in the morning.
Oh, man.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, you should get an award for that.
I'd have to agree with that, Bill.
But this is Inside Outdoors with old buddy Bill here.
Yes, and this is
Goldfort.
Not quite as old Don Jordan here.
And this is not quite as old.
This is a young buck.
The kid.
As either of you, the kid, his name is Rich Reardon. So and I'm real happy to be here. I'm glad you guys are, too.
Well, we're just happy we could all get together one more time.
Well, I do want to say a couple things real quick that you are listening to WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, and we're real happy to be here on our community radio station. Also, there have been a little bit of confusion. They think maybe we're just live here at the show on Saturday morning, but we're not. We're doing this a little earlier in the week via Zoom technology. And so if you can't call in and get us, even though it may sound like we're in the studio talking live. So I just want to make that clear. Please don't give a call. But if you'd like to leave a message, you can use that same number and that they will get that to us. And let's start out. How are you guys doing this week?
We're doing all right on this end.
Yeah. We're doing all right. It's a little less boring. I was able to go to a couple of stores. Boy, it's like the floodgates were lifted around town this week. At every store I went to was crowded, and I heard the same from other people. So
I didn't go to none of them, so I'm all right. But you was talking about live and taped and stuff. When Dan called me this week and talked to me.
He did.
Yeah, Dan called, and I was glad to hear from him. Hadn't heard from him for a while. But he said it sounded like we was live. So that's probably confusing people that we're right. Sounding live and we're really not. And same way with this lady that called in. We apologize that we couldn't get her phone or her call, but we weren't live, so we weren't there to take it. And but we'll try to answer the questions anyhow that she has and or anybody else that leaves a message.
And you can call into the station and ask us a question. It may take us till the next week to answer it. So pretty easy to ask us a question. Just leave it on the WFHB voicemail, and I'll get it from them. And, you know, for an example of that, here's a message was left for us from a listener. I wish she had left her name, but we'll be talking about most of the stuff later in the show. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, I thought I was calling indoor outdoors. They don't answer the phones. I guess I got the station. The 323 number was open to them. I just wanted to comment that I'm glad they're back on the air live and right now, and they're talking about mushrooms this week. I wish they would include more information now on deer fever, which they reviewed about a month ago. I think that has something to do with the current hysteria over the coronavirus, 19, whatever they call it anyway, which is a microorganism, I believe, in the water. And Lake Monroe, water discussion is important, and the infection of the animals.
And there she got cut off. So keep your comments short or questions short. Answering machine's not going to let you talk forever. And WFHB will send that along. We'll be able to answer the question for you, no problem.
And I've got a question, and Yuns may know the answer. A little trivia question, and for John and Dan, and I'm sure they're both listening. Where does the White River, East Fork, and West Fork, where do they begin and where do they end? Do you know? Now, old Dan, he can't call in now, but he'll call me and tell me where it's at. Him or John one or both.
Okay, we'll ask the question one more time just so I can get clear.
Okay, where does White River, East Fork, and West Fork begin? Where is the actual beginning of each fork? I don't know. I haven't looked it up yet, so that's the reason I'm asking John and Dan to work on this, and probably Dan already knows.
Do we know where the confluence is, where they come together?
They don't actually come together, do they?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the White River.
Oh, the Ohio?
I don't know where it is.
You don't know?
No, but
I don't either.
It's way down there. You know, it's below it's below shoals. So I don't know.
Well,
I don't know
if you're talking about the headwaters. I know that it at least goes through Noblesville and Fishers up in that area.
It goes way up. It goes way up to past Kokomo and up in there.
There's a reservoir up there near, what is it, the Morse Reservoir.
That's Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, but northern Indianapolis, I believe that's fed by part of it, by the White River. I may be wrong.
Well, anyway, I was asked that question, and I couldn't answer it, so.
I couldn't answer it either. That's good to know. I hope somebody does.
Well, I haven't had time to really look and see and check it out, and I thought, well, that's a good one for Dan and John to work on, because they're both pretty knowledgeable of things that's going on. And Dan, he's a real knowledgeable person.
Well,
when it comes to trails and roads and stuff. So
it's interesting because there's a lot of I kind of know a little about this because there's some runoff that comes all the way down from Fort Wayne and maybe even a little bit more north of there, because I think it goes up into Michigan, which is leading me into another story. But like to consider that, I believe it comes down through Fort Wayne, but it goes into various different tributaries. And then down near Marion or Muncie, it kind of turns into the White River, which we know coming down through Fishers and Pendleton, Anderson, all that area. Where it goes after that, I'm not as sure. I just know it comes down through Martinsville and south, but...
Okay, here we go, boys. I got it right here. You ready?
Yeah.
White River, also called West Fork of White River, of central and southern Indiana. It rises in Randolph County in the east central part of the state and flows generally westward past Muncie and Anderson for about 65 miles.
Right.
So
which is south of Fort Wayne. I knew there was... I think that there's a lot of different things that run off, you know, in various areas that eventually turn into that main channel. But it all comes down from Michigan, basically. Well, and that brings up, I don't know if you've heard on the news, but Michigan is in big trouble. Up in, there's a town called Midland, which is basically up near Saginaw, near the Saginaw Bay, a little bit inland from there. And there are two reservoirs that were made north of there, and that whole area is a big, you know, it's a river valley, and so they dammed it up in a place called Sanford, and then if you look north of that, and you can look on Google Earth or whatever and see this, and then there's another one in Edenville, which is called Wixom Lake, and so what happened was with all this rain, Wixom Lake Dam failed. Which is very similar to, not quite as big, but very similar to the spillway at our dam. That failed, and then it all went downstream to this next lake, which is dammed up, which is called Sanford Lake. And at the bottom of that is the town of Sanford, a much bigger lake. And this one's a little bit more akin to Lake Monroe in the size. And that dam broke. And so both of these lakes are now in the middle of Midland, which is even down the river a little far, you know, or down the valley a ways. And they've got 9 feet of water in the middle of Midland. And if you can just imagine with this COVID-19, you can't get out of your house or anything, and now you're underwater 9 feet, that place is going to be a major disaster area in Michigan.
Yeah, it's been on TV all day, actually, on and off. In between coronavirus, I mean, it's coronavirus and then maybe another story and then more coronavirus. But yeah, some people were in trouble up there. I saw on TV anyway.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Too bad for them. I'm sorry to hear about it. They've got lots of other problems up there right now, so
right.
They don't need this.
Well,
they got it though.
It's an outdoors disaster. You know, sometimes we want to dam things up, but we may not be prepared for some of the changes that are happening in the environment.
Well, speaking of environment, I've got, you know, we didn't finish our White River question.
Okay, go ahead.
East Fork of the White River rises in Columbus, Indiana, and runs 200 miles before joining the West Fork near Petersburg, down by the power plant.
Mm-hmm. Right,
then completes the 50 remaining 50 miles to the Wabash. So there you have it. Columbus
starts at Columbus.
Right, it's just outside of town over there.
Huh.
You know,
go
ahead.
What starts it? What runs into it? Hey, something starts it up there.
I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to look that on the map, I suppose, since they say it starts in Columbus. Actually, the East Fork is formed well above Columbus. Ah, you're right, Bill. By the Driftwood and Flat Rock Rivers.
Okay, now you're talking. Yeah.
And further north by the Big Blue and Sugar Creek. The Big Blue is the one where they have the Bears of Blue River book you must have heard of.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where it is. It's north of Columbus.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Both of those rivers are good smallmouth streams, by the way, the Flat Rock and the Driftwood.
And, that's good.
Good float trips.
And hey, I saw, I guess we kind of covered that, but over in Yellowwood, you had a picture on Facebook of quite a nice bass that guy got.
Oh, that was actually Lake Lemon.
Oh, Lemon. That's right. Yeah, Lemon.
Yeah. And it looked, they said the water looked like a mud pool, you know. I know it probably was, but. And the fish itself looked like it had been not in the sunlight. You know, it looked like it had been in deep water or not getting any sun to it because it was real pale.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a 4-pound crappie out of Patoka, which my brother-in-law in Dubois County, Jim McFall, sent me that picture and alerted me to it.
Wow, 4-pound. I'd like to have seen that fish.
Well, yeah, the state record crappie is a white crappie is only 4 pounds, 6 ounces.
Yeah.
So
that's a big fish.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really nice one.
Are they good tasting when they're that big? I mean, I like the little ones because they, you got to do a lot of work to get the fillets, but.
Well, Bill probably backed me up on this, but crappie are good in the spring while the water's cold.
Yeah.
And they're not so good when it warms up.
It's true, and a big one there won't be much change in the taste of a big one and a small one,
really,
if they're in, like he said, cold water, especially.
Yeah. Well, that'd be a good fish then, what he got.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't be anything to throw back, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah, that's the kind of crappie that you could catch, or a lot of people do catch. Down at Kentucky Lake,
right,
and a lot of those reservoirs in the south have huge crappies. There's nothing to catch a 3-pound crappie down there. And of course, minnows, you got to pretty much use minnows.
Yeah,
if you want to catch crappies, you can catch them on jigs when they're really hitting, but if you want to be sure, you better take a minnow bucket with you.
Yeah, you better take a bucket full of minnows.
Yes, sir.
Yes, and the big crappie in Kentucky. And I was going to mention about crappie right now at Lake Monroe are just going berserk, apparently. Everybody that fishes for them catches them, and they all have some decent ones to show. It's not like it was here for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
There are actually some, desirable crappies in Lake Monroe.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And there was also a picture on the Lake Monroe fishing site of a woman who caught a nice walleye.
Oh, out of Monroe?
Uh-huh, yeah. Right. So there's still some of those in there, and it was
They're there.
It was over 20 inches for sure.
Right.
So it was pretty good fish.
But you got to remember... the last, 3 years or so, the fishing on Lake Monroe has been very light.
Yes.
So that has given the crappie and stuff chance to grow.
Uh-huh. Why do you think it's been light?
Well, the economy and everything, people just didn't have the money and wasn't moving around.
And the lake became less desirable too with all those blue-green algae outbreaks.
Right.
The water clarity, especially in the lower end, downhill pretty badly.
Yeah, everybody's afraid to eat anything out of there due to the fact that it is so polluted anymore. Right. And I mentioned here a couple, 3 weeks ago, I have seen more boats pass this spring in the last couple, 3 months. Of course, everybody's laid off and stuff on account of the virus.
Right.
But I've seen more boats pass than I've seen in the last 3 or 4 years, really. I'll be honest. Yeah.
I remember you saying that, I think, last week, Bill.
Well, up until this past 2 or 3 months, in past years, if you've seen a boat now and a boat then, and you'll see one or two 1 week, and maybe you won't even see. I've seen go by weeks at a time and not even see a boat pass.
Right.
Now that ain't no sign they didn't go to another ramp, but I'm talking about this ramp, and now it's nothing to see 4 or 5 boats at a time going down. So it's really picked up this year, and of course. By that being slacked off for the last 3 or 4 years, the fish have probably got bigger and better, and it's it may be some good fishing down there. I don't know. You might take them all home if I was going to catch a bunch of them, I'd take, bring them home, and I got a well, and I'd pump me a tank full of well water, and I'd put them in there for about a week or two, and clean them up a little bit, and then I'd devour them.
Now, that's a good idea. I know a lot of people that do that sort of thing.
And catfish, same way. I like to, even regardless of where you put your, catch your catfish, I like to put them in a little clear water for a week or two, and for a week anyway, you know, and keep fresh water in there and keep it going, and clean them up. And
have you ever notice any nasty residue in the water when it makes you a believer, doesn't it?
There'll be a lot of a mess in there. A lot of dirt.
Bluegill are about, as far as I can tell, bluegill are about the cleanest when it comes to that.
Yeah, right. I agree with you. Yeah.
And they sure are good to eat. And they'll be coming on here before too long. You know, the 1st of June, they ought to be on the beds, don't you think?
They come on a light moon, don't they?
Full moon.
Full moon, is it? Well, it'll be another couple weeks in.
Right.
Yeah. I'll have to look and see, but it'll be another couple weeks, I think, and then they'll start, and that'll make it what you said, 1st of June.
Yeah, they're on the beds. A few of the bluegill I've seen coming out of Monroe this year are worthwhile.
They've had a chance to grow one.
Well, and also, I think at least two out of the last 3 years, we haven't had that 20-foot over pool water level.
Right. They've kept her pretty well.
Really hurts the reproduction.
Oh, my Lord, yes. It just about kills it.
Yeah, it does.
Things
are looking up in the fishing world. Kevin said that for a long time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
What happened to Rich? Rich left us.
He disappeared.
Yeah.
That's all right. I see his name up there.
I'm back.
Oh, there he's back.
You had to go to the outhouse? Is that what you said?
I do have one out there.
Well, I know you did. I didn't know you were actually, you know, that was functional.
You didn't know he was occupying it?
That was a quick trip, wasn't it?
Yeah, quick one. That's a winter time trip.
Yeah, that's a two-seater, what can I say?
Winter time trip.
I want some bait. I want some bass. I've been a sportsman for a mess of fish. These female crickets I never give.
Hey, we're back.
We're back already.
Yes,
what about this rabbit disease?
Well, yeah, that's something that John, and I want to just say hi to John because he's been a guest host and want to give a shout out to him.
Yeah, I do too. Hi, John.
Hi, John. And he talked about there's some kind of rabbit maybe disease, and people kind of relate that to the COVID virus, but it's different. It's a hemorrhagic, which is very close to the disease that we have with deer. Is that true, Don? I think you know more than I do.
We have that hemorrhagic fever in deer here, but this is something new in rabbits, and I looked up, and only article I could find on it is out of the American Council of Science and Health, it says here. It says, rabbit hemorrhagic disease strikes Washington State. So, anyway, this is a virus. Causes a fatality rate of nearly 100% of the animals that get infected. And this is sweeping around the globe, apparently, and originated. It was first detected in a domestic rabbit in the San Juan Islands, which are north of Puget Sound in Washington State. And reports suggest it is invariably lethal. So it must have wiped out somebody's domestic rabbits and apparently started there.
Hmm.
And we could only, they say the virus could have only spread quickly if it was facilitated by humans, perhaps via transport of farmed rabbits.
Hmm.
And not all rabbits are affected by it. It infects the European rabbit, and it has been introduced all over the world, such as the San Juan Islands, and is considered an invasive species, they say.
Wow.
But it also infects hares, jackrabbits, and the eastern cottontail rabbit may also be vulnerable to this disease. So bunny rabbits are under the hammer, and I don't know that there's really not much information on it out there. I don't know whether we have it in Indiana. It doesn't say anything about it being spread anywhere.
Well, I think John said that it was on the West Coast mainly, but they weren't real sure because it's so new how much it spread. But it makes you think about coyotes and other things that prey on these animals, that they may end up, you know, if you lose the rabbits, it's going to affect, you know, the food chain.
Well, yeah, definitely. Rabbits are number one food item out there.
Mm-hmm.
Will it transfer to coyotes and...
Well, nobody knows, I'm
foxes,
sure.
Foxes, stuff. No, nobody knows yet.
No, since it's new. But, you know, this is reminiscent of how chronic wasting disease got started in the deer population.
Mm-hmm.
It was a game farm, you know.
Right.
A canned hunting place that was raising elk, I believe.
Yep.
It got started there. And those deer, those captive elk, transmitted the disease that is now pretty much across the country.
Right.
Except Indiana, I guess. Anyway, it's similar to that. Kind of same kind of spread,
right?
I think so.
Well, hopefully they don't spread too much, but chances are it will.
Well, yeah, that's what I believe that is. The chances are it will.
It's a greater chance that it will than it won't.
Well, you
that's
know,
problem.
A lot of people I've been a lot of articles I've been reading about the COVID. Basically, what they're saying in general is this could lead to other pandemics because partially what we're doing to Mother Earth. And I, you know, I don't know why you never heard about these things 20, 50 years ago. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they weren't there because I don't have enough information to really talk about it. But you got to just realize that if we pollute the earth, if we destroy the environment, and that's going to lead into our New York Times article here in a minute, you know, with no concern for wildlife or water quality or anything else, it's no wonder that these things are turning up and starting to, you know, show up in nature.
Yeah, well, you got a point there. I mean, and every little bit is important. News and information and what have you, and but people, you know, we've preached on this for how many years? 20?
Yeah.
And nobody seems to want to do anything about it. I mean, you know, they turn their ears to it and their head go wet and they're gone.
Well, you know, I think a major factor in the virus thing is the increase in population density. These epidemics don't start out in, you know, Steinsville. They start out in Wuhan, in New York City, in
right,
big cities, places where there's a lot of people living in close quarters. And the same thing happens with animals. You know, you get too many animals in a habitat, they're going to do number one thing. First thing they do is they destroy the habitat. The second thing they do is all die. So there you have it.
Right.
wildlife management number one.
Well, and then there's other issues here, and this is why it's not a black and white issue. You know, any of this stuff, any way you look at it, and including politics, but nobody's talking about your immune system right now. You just don't hear that. You hear, oh, well, it's going to go to the wayside, whatever. But the people that are dying from the COVID are usually over 60, 70, and they may have compromised immune systems because of the way that they eat, the way that we eat, prepackaged goods and things like that from the store. I want to bring up something else here in a few minutes that kind of deals with this fact, but I think it's really important to think about, man, you got to boost your immune system right now. Especially if you're older, you got to watch what you eat. You should be careful about things that are going to be, going to hurt your immune system, and you need to really bulk up on things that are good for you. And one of them is vitamin D, which we get from the sun, and you can also buy it and buy vitamins and stuff. But vitamin D seems to be really important in this COVID thing to boost your immune system and not get it or have a lesser amount of problems once you do get it. And also vitamin C, I've been reading, is a very big, they've been trying to use vitamin C therapy with people that are really sick, and apparently it really helps. And we're talking massive amounts of vitamin C. So what we can do in our normal daily lives here is get outside if the sun's shining. That's your best source of vitamin D. It's also a hormone, but you can also take, if you can buy it, if your store has it, take your vitamins right now. Right now, vitamin C, you can eat oranges, whatever you can do to increase your vitamin C and to increase your vitamin D in your life will help you to survive anything that you come across, especially with the COVID. And I never hear anybody talking about that in the government, like, hey, well, build your immune system. Let's see how we can try to fight this from other ways, you know?
I got something to add to that.
Okay, go.
Oh, that's here.
Well, you know that Linus Pauling, famous scientist, chemist, won the new Nobel Prize back in the 50s or 60s for his work on the value of vitamins in human health.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just pretty much poo-pooed it and didn't pay much attention to it until recently.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who some of you out there may know, named Ron Nehrig, who was the guy who put PCB manure or sewage sludge on his farm down off Fairfax Road back in the Westinghouse PCB days.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very up on this stuff. So, yes, vitamin C and vitamin D are both good for you. Thing is that to take enough vitamin C to do much good, you have to take a different form of vitamin C than is generally available. You have to get this vitamin C that dissolves in water instead of oil, okay, so that your system can keep it. Right now, the one you take that you buy at the drugstore, you take that vitamin C and that vitamin D, your body does not store it. It just goes, it gets what it can as it goes through your digestive tract, and the rest of it goes out, right? So you have to get this form of vitamins that are hydroponic, I guess. That's probably not the right word, but anyway.
Good try.
And take thousands of units of it a day, thousands of units.
They say corn is good for the immune system. And that's the reason that I'm buying better quality whiskey and drinking more of it to get that their immune system built up to the top.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the only way you can get corn whiskey is to buy hooch.
You think so?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, but
you know a place to get some hooch?
Well, I'll bet we can find somewhere.
I bet we could too.
Pretty quick.
Well, don't you have your supply of snow snakes medicine? That should work.
I got some of that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, you buy a better quality whiskey and you get better quality corn, and then that you drink more of it, and boys, I tell you what, it helps a lot.
That might be a new type of vitamin C.
It's
vitamin
new,
corn.
It may be, could be. We haven't had that. We haven't got that certified yet.
The FDA will let us do it, you can bet. We'll send some free stuff to the president, and he'll probably like it.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, he'd like it real well. Yeah. Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, whatever.
Vitamin C and vitamin D was also good for you. It's supposed to have some effect on coronavirus, making it less severe or something like that.
Right.
But it's also good for your skin. So all of you skin cancer prone individuals out there, vitamin D is good for that, along with the rest of your vitamin intake.
Well, that's good to know.
If you don't take vitamin D with calcium, your system doesn't take it up to help your bones. So those of us with osteoporosis are certainly into taking vitamin D.
Well,
good for you.
And again, we're not doctors, but we are saying this is over the counter, and they do seem to be saying that there's a lot of vitamin D and vitamin C if you've got the virus, and also to help your immune system before you get the virus. So it's probably worth taking your multivitamin at the very least every day and getting out and getting some.
That would be. It certainly would.
And we're running slow on time, so I want to get into another thing if you don't mind me bringing this up. The lady that called in was asking us about water quality and stuff. So, Don, I know you know something about it. There was an article in the New York Times about forests near Lake Monroe.
Okay. Well, you may remember, Ben, probably a month ago or so, we mentioned on the show that the Monroe County commissioners had asked, or the county council had, no, it was the commissioners had asked the council to hire a lawyer or provide the money for hiring a lawyer for the commissioners so they could sue the U.S. Forest Service over this 4,000-acre project, the South Houston project, they're calling it, in the Hoosier National Forest, mostly in Jackson County.
Right.
But it's at the headwaters of Lake Monroe. And the lawsuit, in a nutshell, basically says the Forest Service didn't pay much attention or any attention to the environmental impact and the water quality issues that this project will cause. There, a couple of new things in them that I hadn't known about before is, number one, the project is expected to generate $2.6 million from timber sales for the federal government. A portion of the sales would go to the Hoosier National Forest Project. Well, there you go. And the second thing was that this whole plan, this whole project that they've got going, they're going to start, that could last for 20 years.
Yeah, I did see that. That was amazing.
20 years. That's just, a forest, and it's the largest project of its type to ever take place in Hoosier National. I'm sure that's true. That's what the Times said, but I know that's true too. And there's never been anything that size here. And for them to pick the headwaters of our drinking water and a lot of people's drinking water to make even more sediment in it, that's another thing. The reason why our water quality guys had to search far and wide for a testing laboratory that would approve our water is for the sediment levels, the the turbidity of our water, the too much stuff in it to pass.
Right.
And they finally found somebody that did. And of course, this will add more stuff to our water floating around in our water with siltation from the runoff from the clear cuts and the burning, frankly, you know, that will also bare the ground. So there you go.
What are they going to do up there besides timber?
Well, they're going to do everything.
Well, they're going to clear cut the timber, you know, which is one of the major problems for everybody.
Well, yeah, I understand.
Basically ruins about everything you could think of. I mean, why would you just bulldoze a forest?
They didn't mention anything about selective cutting. And it looks to me like they're going to, like you say, they're going to bulldoze it and get their skidders in there and pull every log they can out of there and make $2.6 million.
Yeah, which isn't comparatively a lot of money for the amount of damage it's going to cause people, you know, and the water quality.
Well, they got to build roads, and these have to be Forest Service spec roads wide enough for two log trucks to meet on the road. Those cost a lot of money. By the time it gets done, they will have sold those trees for under $1 a tree.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the kind of thinking they have, though.
And, you know, folks, you know, some of us who lived back in time of Vietnam and other things where we protested, you know, what was going on, we need to get back to that a little bit and start taking some responsibility. You know, I'd like to see more people taking action, because I think that when the people start to speak, that's when things start to happen. So I really hope we get more protesting and you know, tell the legislature about how we feel about them doing this. You know, it's really not about money. It is to them, but not to us, the people that, you know, supposedly we own this land, you know, or public lands. We've been talking about this for 20 years.
Been going on for longer than 20 years.
Well, I guess I mean just in our radio show, you know, we've talked about it. And I guess I'm just saying that we really need to get out and do something about it, more than just talk. Otherwise, our kids are going to be in more trouble in 10, 20, 30 years.
Well, here's the thing, Rich. People protest about stuff that they get emotionally motivated by.
True.
And what they're emotionally motivated right now is chopping.
Yeah.
They want to be able to go back to the hair salon, to the mall, to the barber shop, and do all the things that they like to do. And if they don't get to do it, then we got guys with guns standing outside the Michigan State House. Now there's your protesters today.
Yeah.
They're not the same motivation. Yeah. In order to recapture that, there has to be a catastrophic environmental event, and catastrophic environmental event is climate change, and that hasn't even raised any emotion on the part of the American people. So what you gonna do?
You're totally right, and you know, but there is more to this COVID virus thing and global warming and all the stuff that we're facing, it's a fragile situation that we're living in. You know, everybody just sort of grew up in good times and didn't feel like they really needed to worry too much about, you know, trash or other things and pesticides, blah blah blah. But and that kind of brings up another thing that I wanted to bring up, something I read this week that was really pretty cool and something that you can do at home. There's a guy named Doug Ptolemy, and he wrote a book called Nature's Best Hope, A New Approach to Conservation That Starts in Your Yard. And I thought this was really important because it's something that you can do, you know, which is what we're talking about. So he says, imagine if all the back and front yards and even your patio containers across the country were seen as one magnificent patchwork quilt, a homegrown national park. In other words, home gardeners could join forces to bring back a variety of native plants, nurture struggling birds and bees and other pollinators. And really we could think about this. and do something in our front yards and talk to our neighbors and really try to make a difference. And it really can, especially east of the Mississippi River, because a lot of the land is privately owned on the east side of the river. So your home garden can be a lot more than just what you plant there if you really think about it, because there are invasive species and things that you can get rid of that you really need to learn about, and you can provide native habitat for birds and butterflies and other pollinators. I can't tell you the whole story of everything that he writes about, but I thought it was really fascinating that he's saying, you know, if people can make their own personal meaningful transition towards conservation in their own yard. And a lot of people don't realize that bees travel and butterflies travel. And even if you're in a city where you have, you know, a rooftop garden or a community garden or whatever, that you really can learn about what should be planted there and you know, what's going to help support that community of pollinators, you know.
And well, you know, Rich.
Yeah, go ahead.
National Wildlife Federation has had this backyard wildlife habitat program going for 25, 30 years, probably more than that.
Right.
And they have volumes of material available on what you can do to your backyard. And there's amazing amount of things you can do. And of course it would take lots of people to have a lot of impact, you know, but it can improve your own habitat by doing that. Like you say, give birds the places to perch instead of just bare ground out there, you know?
Well, I've got a few things you can do. You can put in native milkweed. Pie weed is another one. Other native plants. You want to get rid of things like barberry, Bradford pears, autumn olive.
Want to get rid of that fake
kudzu if you can.
Honeysuckle.
Yeah, you want to put a bubbler, clean water in the back of your. You know, it's not even like spreading water out like you're going to have to pay for. If you can get a bubbler going, that just bubbles. You know, it gives a lot of oxygen to the water, and the birds will all come in there and drink it and bathe in it. And these are things that we can all do to really make a difference in our yards. And so I'm just trying to say through our little radio show, let's try to look at that. And why don't you tell them where they can go to find out more information? I didn't even know that existed.
What, the National Wildlife Federation?
Yeah.
I think it's the NWF.org. I think.
Yeah.
I think that's the page. And they're the oldest wildlife organization in the country.
Do you get a magazine from them every once in a while?
Yeah, they put out a magazine, and they have that Ranger Rick magazine.
I get one whenever they print them, I guess.
Right.
They started out as more of a grassroots kind of outfit that's more for the normal kind of people instead of, you know, people involved in other groups may be a little different social class and whatnot. But these appeal to the common folks, the National Wildlife Federation, and they speak on common terms. So I highly recommend checking them out.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll leave it alone, but I just mean to say, let's do something and quit complaining. You know, you can get rid of those invasive plants and feed your critters and your birds and create little environments, little ecosystems that can really help pollinators and moving things along. It's just a really wonderful thing to me if we can begin to start to think about how we can improve things rather than just, you know, beautify them.
Hey, the last week we've had a mama song sparrow feeding a cowbird baby.
Wow.
So that's pretty much proof, if you ever wanted to see it, of how a cowbird works. I've got a couple of pictures of it. I'll post them on my Facebook Inside Outdoors site so you can take a look at that. Cowbirds really devastate a lot of species of birds, especially warblers, house wrens, obviously song sparrows and probably other sparrows too. They, as you know, they lay their eggs in another bird's nest to be hatched and raised.
Right.
And that's what's really destroys the reproductive prowess of a lot of birds. So, hence fewer variety of birds. So cowbirds versus all birds.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, they're known as parasitic birds. And I think you can see why.
Have you seen your humiliating woodpecker there?
I haven't seen her or him lately, but I've heard them. I've heard her anyway. And there was a northern flicker landed on the suet feeder this afternoon.
Oh,
you know, big old northern flicker. You know, they're pretty good size. And it was nice to see it. It was a male, big red-headed, big red patch on the back of his head. And rose-breasted grosbeaks are still here, which I thought they had gone. We hadn't seen them for a week, and then Mrs. Grosbeak showed up here today.
Well, I'll be darned.
They're still around. They're still around.
Well, that's good.
And the raccoon's still here and is still going to the bird feeder.
Oh, you haven't caught him yet, huh?
Well, I just go ahead and feed him. That's the way it goes. That's with squirrels, too. They get their, they have their own feeder out there now.
Yeah.
The raccoons do?
No, the squirrels. The raccoons, they just make everything their feeder.
They steal anything they can.
That's right. Little devils.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, it's I guess that's about all I got to say, Rich.
They all work around to be part of, you know, be part of the environment. You know, we were talking about Yellowstone and how they rebrought the wolves back, and that turned into trees growing differently and all kinds of things. I don't know if everybody's...
Everything's connected.
It is all connected. And so, you know, be kind to everything, and you're probably going to do better.
Don't smash that cockroach.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm going to bring cockroaches into this whole equation, but I probably should. But I tell you what, spiders, people don't like spiders, but they're real good for your household.
They are.
They take care of mosquitoes and all kinds of other problems. Don't be mean to them either.
I was going to mention, this reminds me of, you remember Bill Cyphers came up last week on the show?
Mm-hmm.
His favorite saying was that life is no bigger in an elephant than it is in a blade of grass. You got to rest your case on that.
That's true. Right. And the more we think about this, we can make changes and we can find other ways, you know, to go. I'm not sure about this totally, but I heard that Coca-Cola is now taking some strides to stop their plastic production with their bottles. You know, decrease the amount of plastic bottles that go out into the environment as trash every day.
Oh, man.
And they have supposedly, there's some thought being put into a different kind of plastic, or maybe it's supposedly it's organic base that will break down. And
well, it's about time.
I think it's about time, and I really hope that they're doing that. And we've talked about hemp in that regard, that it's a good thing to have around. You can make almost anything you can with plastic. And the best way to fight it is, you know, don't buy it. That usually gets their attention.
Yes, economic choices definitely make an impact.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to get people thinking about it like they used to, at least back in the, I guess, the 70s and 80s. The boomers that'd be me, I suppose, that get made fun of so much of nowadays. Had fairly good attitude about things like recycling and whatnot, which I don't think is happening so much anymore.
There's quite a bit of it, though.
Recycling,
we do, but
there's an unbelievable amount of stuff you produce.
Oh my Lord, yes! I mean, it's amazing.
And you know, they had the recycling places closed, so we got a garage full of of cardboard boxes from Amazon, you know?
Yeah.
And whatnot. I suppose we could cut down on the tree cutting if we cut down on cardboard boxes, but we don't want to put Jeff Bezos out of business, I guess. So,
well, especially if they're going to destroy the post office.
Yeah, yeah.
Which seems to be the plan.
Yes. Well, we don't want them to destroy the Washington Post either. But, you know, rich guys don't. But that's the way it is with all newspapers.
Well, you know what? A whole nother week has gone by, and we're about out of time.
Well, hallelujah, brothers.
But we had some good talks today. I hope people are into this and will take to heart what we say.
And remember and remind everybody this is not live. Don't call in.
All right.
We're dead.
Call in, but leave a message, and we'll get back to you next week.
We're sort of live.
We're sort of live, yes. We're alive, but we're not alive. Something like that. So anyway, by golly, everybody have a good week and enjoy this weather. And hopefully it'll dry up and we can get in the garden here before long. So everybody have a good one. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Bye.
Summer's ends around the bend, just flying. The swimming suits are on the line, just I'll meet you there for our conversation. I hope I didn't ruin your whole vacation. Well, you never know how far from home you're feeling until you've watched the shadows cross the ceiling. Well, I don't know, but I can see it snowing. In your car, the windows are wide open. Just come on home. Come on home. No, you don't have to be alone. Just come on home. Valentines break hearts and minds at random. That old Easter egg ain't got a leg to stand on. Well, I can see that you can't win for trying. And New Year's Eve is bound to leave you crying. Come on home. No, you don't have to be alone. Just come on home. The moon and stars hang out in bars just talking. I still love that picture of us walking, just like that old house we thought was haunted. Summer's end came faster than we wanted. Come on home. Come on home. No, you don't have to be alone. Come on home. Come on home. You don't have to be alone. Just come on home.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m., right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.